BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Welcome to Strong Message Here, Strong Recommend, our cultural recommendations for the summer and a look at their impact on language. I'm Armand Iannucci.
And I'm Helen Lewis.
And what do you recommend this week, Helen?
I would like to recommend a book called Every Living Thing by Jason Roberts, and yes, it's about taxonomy.
Is it now?
That I know what you're thinking.
I'm thinking...
Rush me details.
Okay, that's about labelling, isn't it?
Exactly. Yes. So it's a twin...
The science of labelling.
Yeah, it's a twin biography of Carl Linnaeus, the Swedish botanist, and another guy who we shall call the Comte de Buffon, who was, as the name implies, French. It's about that kind of 18th century mania for categorising nature.
Yes.
Which I've just found incredibly interesting. But it's also about how much of the way that we think about the natural world is shaped by Linnaeus. So he invented, this is his a word for you, binomial nomenclature.
Mm-hmm. And that's using two words.
Yeah, there we go.
To give a description of
Troglodytes is the wren, for example. So he basically had this idea of nesting all of creation down into different stacking things, you know, species and genus and phylum, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. But he also had some very odd ideas too. He believed that God had created the world, and this was, you know, something that you had to write in all the scientific texts at the time.
Yeah.
So he had great difficulty dealing with the fact that there was just a huge amount of variation among species. There were so many species. He thought there could only be a limited number because how many names could Noah learn on the ark?
Well, yeah.
I mean, it just makes, it makes sense. And he also thought that fossils weren't real. I mean, you know, because he was essentially...
Well, they were plastic.
Well, he was a creationist, essentially. Yes. So he thought they were just unusual rock formations.
Okay.
Because he couldn't have any idea that there had once been animals, like dinosaurs.
You can't even use, if you believe you're a creationist, you can't even use the theory that, you know, in an infinite length of time, sand will form, by coincidence, form the shape of a turtle. So what are they then?
So I presume on the 8th or 9th day when God would have done everything else, then he sort of thought, this will be a laugh. What I'll do
games.
Is I'll put some lizards in there. Oh, they'll never guess what these are. This will keep them guessing for years. But yeah, so he contrasts all the way through the author, like Linnaeus's kind of very rigid idea of taxonomy with Du Boffon, who had this much more fluid idea. You know, he was much more of the idea that everything was continuously changing. He anticipated evolution by natural selection in a lot of ways.
Presumably, the book itself is a rip-roaring read.
Well, it's very nerdy, but I am very nerdy, and therefore I enjoyed it. And
good.
I mean, Linnaeus was mad. I mean, in the way of Francis Galton, who I wrote about in my book, he was one of these people who was just almost enormously difficult to get on with, thought an enormous amount of himself, and was very, very weird indeed.
Yes.
But those biographies are often the most interesting.
Yes.
It's just, he was a kind of monomaniac. He tried lots of things. You know, he tried getting a medical degree, for example, and alighted on this slightly late. He basically made his name as a kind of pox doctor and then pivoted hard to botany and became a professor at Uppsala, where, well, one of the things he had was the idea that new species could only be named after botanists, accredited botanists. People couldn't name the stuff after themselves. So essentially what happened was that people went, I found this new flower and sent it to him. And then he said, oh, it's, you know, whatever, something Iannucci-ish, right? But he was absolutely set against the idea that you'd ever use native or traditional names for things, which he called barbarous names. Everything had to be European and Latin.
Yes, yes.
So he was very much of his time in the sense of, like, European civilization was the best.
And presumably then the way they categorised people might now be open to question.
Oh, unbelievably so. So in Systema Natura, which was his classification system of all of humanity, he essentially came up with the four human races that that I think have infected so much thought ever since. So he had essentially white Europeans, red Native Americans, tawny Asians and black Africans. Mm. And they were, as you imagine, mostly delineated by skin colour. But he also had stuff, you know, Europeans were governed by laws, whereas Africans were governed by whims. So he did very much have a hierarchy. And the thing that's, one of the many things that's mad about this is the idea that eventually what they came down to, the idea of species, what a different species is that they can't interbreed with each other. But this doesn't make any sense in the sense that people from Africa and people from Europe can in fact have children. So he imposed a completely unnecessary racial classification on humans that justified the slave trade, essentially.
And this is a recurring thing. There are a lot of these classifications. They sound scientific. They have the aura of science, but actually are quite subjective in that they are formed around the overt or covert
overt prejudices of the person doing the classifying. I mean, we're seeing it in the present day, the way AI, we're told AI is very neutral. And yet, day after day, we're hearing stories about how one chat bot has got very racist once they tweak the algorithms and so on. And,
yes,
and,
Grok declared it was Mecha Hitler.
Yes.
Quite
yes,
recently.
For a brief period, for a brief window.
Yeah. No, you're right. Francis Galton, who's in my book, is exactly the same in that he decided to draw up a list of geniuses. And one of the ways he did that was by looking at the length of obituary you'd got in the Times.
Right.
Which is just clearly not, when you think about it, not an objective classification. And Linnaeus' system was very much like that. He kept having to fiddle with it. He would first of all, he decided that ferrets were like badger. No, the mongoose he thought was a type of ferret. Then he thought it was a type of badger. There was a lot of that kind of stuff.
A lot of this labelling only works if prior to it, a lot of people have done an awful lot of work examining the things, the properties of the things about to be labelled.
Well, de Buffon was more in that tradition. He just would take a horse and he would write down everything about a horse.
Yes.
So he was much more descriptive, I guess, whereas the Linnaean system is much more prescriptive. I mean, obviously, it's immensely helpful for people in different languages to have a common naming system. That was the joy of Latin.
And that's sort of held, hasn't it?
Yeah, one of my favourite bits is the fact that, obviously, when they looked at whether or not species can interbreed, did you know people have gone mad at trying to interbreed big cats?
What, with each other?
Yeah, not with the scientists. No. Yeah, just for clarity.
How we got to this, but yes.
You can have a jaguleps. Mm. That's a jaguar and a leopard. Mm. A jaglion. You can probably guess what that is.
Yeah.
A puma pard.
A puma and a panda? No.
And a leopard. Yeah.
And a leopard. Okay, right, good. Gotcha.
Yeah, second generation lion-tiger hybrids are called Liliger, Tilliger, Litigan and Titigan. Isn't that really joyful? I mean, it's a very Jurassic Park, you know, because they didn't stop to ask whether or not they should.
Yeah. Puts the cavapoo in its place, doesn't it?
It really does. So if you're interested in botany, mad people in the 18th century, or taxonomy, I agree there's maybe three niche interests.
You appear to be at the centre of those three Venn diagrams.
I'm at the nexus of all of them. But I think it's really interesting. In the same way that you might say Giorgio Vasari's Lives of the Artist created our idea of art.
Yes.
You know, he wrote about all those Renaissance artists.
It's to do with who sets the canon.
Yeah, and, this is the canon.
This is the canon, and therefore you mustn't question it, you know, which is, you know, I've gone on at length. I won't do it here about classical music and how...
is there a book like this for classical music that somebody who sketched out the terrain and who was in and who was out?
Oh, I see. There's the Groves Dictionary, I suppose, that misses out a lot of obscure composers because whoever was compiling it at the time.
Yeah.
Beyond Grove just didn't rate them. Lots of female composers who are just ignored. My favourite book on classical music is The Rest is Noise by Alex Ross, the New Yorker.
I have that at home, but it's intimidatingly vast.
It's great though. And it's very, very chewy, but in an entertaining way. You don't have to have any specialist knowledge and so.
Well, there we go. That's what we officially recommend on this one. Chewy books.
Chewy knowledge is good, I think.
Yeah.
Chewy knowledge. Well, thank you very much for that recommendation. You can find Every Living Thing by Jason Roberts in good bookshops, enterprising bookshops, and I'm sure online bookshops. And thank you for listening to Strong Message here, Strong Recommend. We'll be back next week with a recommendation from me, I think. Until then, make sure you're subscribed on BBC Sounds. Goodbye.
Goodbye.